The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Well, we made it to a Thursday, and the news isn't all bad. Welcome to it. One day until the weekend, and hey, tomorrow is actually a holiday if you're a federal employee. Actually, the holiday is now Saturday. Joe Biden signed it into law this afternoon. Yep, making Juneteenth an official federal holiday. Now, for you and I, that really doesn't mean anything, probably for a couple of years, because it takes a while to get the slow-moving federal government gears in motion. But because Juneteenth, which is June 19th, is now a federal holiday, and this year falls on a Saturday, federal employees get tomorrow off. So they got that going for them. Actually, Joe Biden signed the bill into law just a short while ago at the White House. And, well, here's what he said when he did it.
In short, this day doesn't just celebrate the past. It calls for action today.
Okay.
I wish all Americans a happy Juneteenth. I'm certainly going to, in a moment, going to sign in the law, making it a federal holiday. And I have to say to you, I've only been president for several months, but I think this will go down for me as one of the greatest honors I will have had as president. Not because I did it, you did it, Democrats and Republicans. But it's an enormous, enormous honor. Thank you for what you've done. And by the way, typical of most of us in Congress and Senate, I went down the other end of the hall first and thanked your staffs because I know who does the hard work.
That got laughs and applause. How nice. It was a full house there for the signing.
There at the other end. But I thank them as well.
Okay.
And God bless you all. And may God protect our troops.
Thank you. And that's how he ends every time he speaks. And so there you have it. Juneteenth is now a holiday. And it's, you know, being white in America is, this is an interesting time because many of us are learning things that we were never taught in school, right? Juneteenth. Now, I've been talking about it for enough years now that I know, but I never learned about Juneteenth in school and what June 19th was, and forgive me for not having the year in front of me, but after Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, they didn't have the internet back in the 1800s, and the news didn't travel so freely. There was no Twitter. You couldn't just say, hey, everyone's free on Twitter. So the news didn't get to many places, including some places in Texas, where freed slaves didn't know they were freed, and they kept working until June 19th in this year. I apologize for not knowing what year it was, when they finally found out 2 years after they were ostensibly freed. That's what Juneteenth is celebrating. It was the day that the legally freed slaves who didn't know they had been freed, certainly the slave owners didn't tell them, finally found out and were finally free. That was the day that slavery was done. Now, lots of other things came in to replace it, you know, Jim Crow laws and other things. It certainly didn't solve all of our problems, but it is a day worth celebrating. And do you have the year? 1865. Thank you very much. 1865. I'm going to write that down here so I don't forget it. It's 65. There we go. Okay. Emancipation Proclamation was in 63. He's better at dates than I am, obviously. I suck at dates. I was not good in, you know, on Jeopardy. When something comes up, like what decade was it? I check out because I don't know. I don't remember dates. I remember dates from my life, right? But the 1860s, I'm sorry. But anyway, that's what Juneteenth is. And frankly, I would, and I'm being honest with you here. Before, say, 5 years ago, I didn't know what it was, but I did my research and I learned, because we don't teach that in schools, just like we don't teach about the Tulsa race massacre. I'm not going to call it a riot. It wasn't a riot. The people who were killed weren't doing anything wrong except being sitting goats. Is that the right term? Sitting goat? They were being shot and killed and massacred by the white people who didn't like that they were doing okay. We never learned about that in school. Even in Tulsa, people didn't learn about it. So we have a lot of catching up to do. So that's the good news for today. Actually, there was more good news today. This is June. Today's June 17th. And if all goes according to plan, this current Supreme Court term that began last October, it runs October of 1 year through June of the next year. They finish hearing cases in like April. I don't think they heard any in May, but they did hear some in April. And this year, at this point, but before this morning, what now? What did I get wrong now? Sitting ducks. I knew it was something. I do need a vacation. Sitting ducks. I don't even know what I said, but I got it wrong. You know what I'm talking about. You get me. You know. Okay. So sorry about that. So where was I? Oh, talking about. I totally lost my train of thought. This has been a rough week. I will not kid you. I'm dealing with phone company issues and dealing with, oh my God, call centers in far reaches of the planet. And oh my, it's just, you know, this, I need a vacation. And the thing is, I'm still not getting on a plane, because I'll tell you something, this Delta variant of the virus is scary. Don't let your guard down, please, because I'm afraid of what's coming next. So anyway, yes, in Tulsa, that was not a race riot, although that's how they're trying to frame it now, that it's out in the open that this actually happened, that this whole town in Tulsa, the Black Wall Street, it was called, because it was a very successful, lucrative neighborhood where, you know, black people were doing very well, thank you very much. And the white people, I guess, were so threatened by it that they mowed them down. They killed them. It was not a riot. January 6th, that was a riot. It was a riot and an insurrection. Although the Republicans today are trying to tell you it was no such thing. It is mind-boggling. And we've been through this for years now. I mean, the whole opposite word, you know, I started using that term back in the W years. The W years. Talking about opposite world, how, you know, If you take the opposite of what they say, you might hit on some semblance of the truth.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
All right, so we are firmly entrenched in opposite world. And I'm sorry, I'm jumping all over the place, because this is the state of my mind today. Still sleep deprived, though I've got a very comfortable bed to be not sleeping on now. But dealing with frustrations and the world and just a lot of shit behind the scenes. But that's not your problem. We have a show to do today. So we had the Juneteenth signed into law. Oh, I know where I was going. So it is the middle of June now. The Supreme Court term ends at the end of June, but the justices still have, if my count is correct, somewhere in the order of 15 cases to be, not to be decided. I think they've decided them. Maybe the opinions aren't fully written yet, because my goodness, these nine men and women who sit on the Supreme Court, if nothing else, they are loquacious. They use a lot of words. Alito, I think, today wrote a dissent that went for 77 pages that I'm not reading. I'll be honest with you, I'm not reading it. But let me tell you what they did. So what happens is, generally, they're passing down the rulings, the opinions, on Mondays and Thursdays, although that's not set in stone. And because there are still something like 15 opinions to, you know, give to release. If they're only doing it Monday and Thursday, they have next Monday, next Thursday, and the following month, they only have 3 days left in June. They could stretch it into July, or they could add a third day next week. We just don't know. We do know that the next opinions will be announced on Monday, and that's pretty much all we know for sure. Now, so when you go, like what they start announcing them at 10 a.m. Eastern on those prescribed days at 10 a.m. And you can follow along either at the Supreme Court's website. I think it's supremecourt.gov. And you can also follow along at scotusblog.com, which is where I go. I actually have two windows open because they give you the tricks. They tell you how you know if it's the last opinion of the day. This R number is released. And it's a technical thing that if you didn't know what you were looking for, you wouldn't know. But so 10 o'clock this morning, I was here refreshing SCOTUS blog. And the first case they announce is one of the five biggies still outstanding. It was the third challenge in about 10 years to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, Texas versus California. And this was the case, you've heard about it for the last number of years, where Republican states, Republican-led states, were signing on to this Texas lawsuit challenging the Affordable Care Act. There were 18, when they finally went to court, 18 Republican-led states sued after Congress in 2017 stopped enforcing the mandate, the Obamacare mandate. So they, what they did was the tax penalty that the original law levied on anybody who didn't buy insurance, they lowered it to zero. And so their argument was that the government's non-enforcement of the healthcare mandate ended that provision of the law and rendered it illegal. So then they argued that because the mandate is essential to prop up the entire law, its elimination should cause the entire Affordable Care Act to be wiped off the books. That was their argument. So what happened? Well, I'll let CNN tell you what happened.
The Supreme Court dismissing this challenge to the Affordable Care Act. They are saying that the plaintiffs in this case, who were the Republican-led states, so the attorneys general of these various states, including Texas, who have been challenging this law for several years, it's gone up through the courts. The Supreme Court here saying they don't have standing to challenge this law. So for now, the law will stand until potentially another challenger, someone different, brings a case. So this is a significant victory for the Biden administration that urged the Supreme Court not to strike this law down. Interestingly here as well is the vote count. It's a 7-2 vote count with conservatives and liberals joining. It was Alito and Thomas, those justices dissenting. So really, deciding this case on a technical issue that results in the entire law remaining.
Yeah, they didn't even decide the case on the merits. They just said it was on standing. In English, Texas did not have legal standing to challenge the law. So on that technicality, it was thrown out. Has nothing to do with whether or not the individual mandate was severable and the law could stand without it. They're saying we're not even going to look at that because, Texas, you have no standing to bring this case. The other interesting part about it is she said 7-2, Thomas and Alito were the dissenters. So that means Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett all voted to keep the Affordable Care Act the law of the land. Interesting, right? In fact, Amy Coney Barrett sided with a majority in all three of these cases. Now, you know, we haven't gotten to an abortion case yet, and I'm sure that's where she'll come out swinging, but thankfully we're not there yet. There were two other cases that were announced today. The second was not one of the biggies, but important nonetheless. It was the case known as Nestle versus Dole. Nestle, the chocolate company. And it was about alien tort statutes. Yeah, see, but what they're dealing with is like slave labor. Here's the thing. The alien tort statute that allows foreigners to bring lawsuits in U.S. courts for serious violations of international law was what was being discussed here. And So the Supreme Court ruled, well, Justice Clarence Thomas wrote the decision, and it was 8-1 with Alito dissenting. So all the liberals, the so-called liberals, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Breyer. By the way, Breyer wrote the Affordable Care Act opinion. Breyer, who we are all hoping is going to retire. But anyway, he wrote the first case, the opinion. The second one written by Thomas with Alito dissenting, and I think that was the 77-page dissension, in case you were wondering. And they voted to overturn the Ninth Circuit Court decision that allowed foreigners to bring these lawsuits in U.S. courts for serious violations of international law. But if you look at it, what the Supreme Court did in this case is made it even harder, maybe impossible, to hold corporations accountable for human rights abuses overseas. So, and somebody, I don't remember, I don't know who I took this tweet from, but somebody said, think about this when you buy chocolate. That's the Nestle's company. By the way, same Nestle company that is raiding our water here in Florida. In Central Florida, we have these wonderful natural springs. And Nestle's cut a deal with, I don't know if it was the state or the county where these springs are located, but they pay a pittance. And I mean literally next to nothing. I wasn't planning on talking about this today, so I don't have the numbers in front of me. But really, I mean nothing for the rights to take water from these natural springs and bottle it and sell it off. And this Florida isn't the only place where they're doing this. They do this in states around the country. Florida gave Nestle a sweetheart deal. And we, the citizens of Florida, have no say in it. But just this is the same company, Nestle. Yeah, you know, you may choose not to patronize them. That's your choice. But the Supreme Court, I don't get it. And then the third decision was unanimous. And again, the liberals, so-called liberals on the court, in this case, sided with Chief Justice John Roberts, who wrote this opinion. And this one was unanimous. And I have mixed feelings on this. What this case was, Fulton versus Philadelphia. And basically, this is a case in which the city of Philadelphia refused to make referrals to Catholic Social Services, an adoption agency, because Catholic Social Services did not certify same-sex couples as foster care parents. In other words, they would not place a child with an LGBTQ couple. The city said that the CSS practice violated a provision of its standard foster care contract, but the court held that the provision of the city's standard foster care is not generally applicable as required by the Employment Division versus Smith, another case. Basically, what they said is, look, you know what? This is just this one agency. Gay couples have other ways to adopt or foster children. This is not their only avenue. In fact, this is one small agency. And because they can work with, the gay couples can work with other agencies, their rights to adopt or foster children is not in peril. They said this does not violate their First Amendment rights. Supreme Court says Philadelphia wrongly limited ties with this Catholic agency over their refusal to work with gay couples. So they ruled that the city of Philadelphia went too far in imposing its anti-discrimination law on a Catholic charity that won't consider gay parents eligible. The ruling, it was 9-0. And, you know, this is a win for these religious zealots who put their religion over the rights of the people. And I'm not only talking about the gay couples who might want to add a child to their family, but those children who are in foster care or worse, and just want a home where people will love them and care for them. There's also other problems because this law is not applied to straight couples who are violating Catholic doctrine in other ways. And again, it denies foster kids a loving family that wants them. But nobody asked me because I don't sit on the Supreme Court. And with that one, that was it for today. So they come up again on Monday, 10 a.m. Eastern, You can follow along at SCOTUSblog.com or I think SupremeCourt.gov. Just put Supreme Court in the Google and it'll find it for you. But let me tell you, there are still 15 cases to be decided, to be announced. I guess I don't have them on this document. I have them all here, and I must have closed that one. But the other cases that we're still waiting on, one is on voting rights. It's Brnovich versus the DNC. It concerns voting limits in Arizona. One of the disputed policies requires election officials to throw out entire ballots cast in the wrong precinct, even on statewide. Hold on, David. David's going to correct me on something else I got wrong. But hold on a second, David. Let me just finish this. So the Arizona voting rights law, it's to be decided. Second one is NC2A athletic compensation. The case is the National Collegiate Athletic Association versus Alston, whether or not college athletes should get paid. The third one is, what am I missing? Oh, I'm missing one. Oh, I see. Third one is the student free speech case. That was a high school student who was, I don't know, something happened with her school, and she went on social media, Snapchat. She posted a Snapchat of herself with her middle fingers raised, and the caption said, "Fuck school, fuck softball, fuck cheer, fuck everything." So this went all the way to the Supreme Court. Concerning how much control schools have over off-campus student speech. So we're still waiting on that one. And the last big one that we're waiting on is, we did that. Wow, they did Fulton County today. So that was the fourth. So we're waiting on those three biggies. So the three biggies are voting rights, NCAA, and student free speech. All right, I crossed my wires here. All right, David Sloan, what do you want to tell me now?
I don't believe that your interpretation of the adoption case is correct.
Oh, really?
I don't believe, no, it does not make it more difficult for a child to get adopted. As
no, they just
fact,
can't use this Catholic social services
for them to get adopted through. It opens up an additional agency for them to get adopted through.
How?
It's just that this agency will not allow a gay couple to adopt children.
Right.
Or foster children. Right. But it's in other words, if they had 10 agencies now they have 11 because previously they would not put children.
Right, because they didn't. They stopped Catholic social services from placing children because they were discriminating against LGBTQ families. Now,
right.
They can adopt. Just if you're gay, go to one of the other 10 agencies.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Love
thank you.
Bye.
Love you too. Bye. All right. So that happened. Let me tell you what's coming up today on the show. There's so much we could talk about. I mean, there's just a million things going on, but you know, I'm trying to focus because we got a show to do. So it's Thursday. That means Howie Klein is coming up. And Howie, runs the Blue America Pack. And, we haven't talked about Blue America much lately. And if you're new to the show, you might not know what it is. Blue America Pack is a PAC, a political action committee. It is run by Howie Klein, along with John Amato of Crooks and Liars and Digby of Digby's Hullabaloo. And what they do is identify the best progressive candidates. Sometimes, you know, Howie vets them all, so he talks to them, and he's pretty stringent on his requirements. And if you meet their requirements of being truly progressive, then they just might endorse you. And what they do is some people he's helped, you know, talked into running, but they raise money for these candidates. And unlike many of these other PACs, Howie, John, and Digby don't take any money. They don't siphon anything off the top. They're not in this to get rich. They're in this to help get progressives elected. And traditionally, the Blue America has focused in on House races. But occasionally they branch out. Sometimes they deal with state legislatures when it's necessary. And sometimes they deal with U.S. Senate races as well, as is the case in this one. So I'm going to take you back on a little little time travel. We're going to get in the Wayback Machine and go back to, when was it? February and March of 2011. So just over 10 years ago. Now, if you were paying attention at that time, you'll remember this story. And I was on the air. I was doing my thing here. I've been doing it for a long time. And this clip was in my archives because I've got that many years of news clips that I lost for a little while when I changed over my computer, but I was able to recover them, thank God. Anyway, so we're going to go back to March. It's March 9th, 2011, and a couple of minutes with Rachel Maddow because she's going to set up this story. We're going to Wisconsin, where then-Governor Scott Walker was trying to screw over the public sector unions in the state. All right, so here's what happened.
Breaking news from Madison, Wisconsin, which, of course, has been the center of American news for the past 3 weeks at least. Tonight, the Republicans in Wisconsin State Senate appear to have invented a new nuclear option for passing legislation with no notice and no quorum and no debate. They invented that new nuclear option today, and then they detonated it today.
Lovely.
After Republican Governor Scott Walker admitted yesterday that he would negotiate with Democrats on his union stripping bill, after a Republican source tells NBC News that the governor said to Republicans in the legislature today that he was willing to compromise on union stripping, after public support for the governor and the union stripping measure started low and then cratered from there, after weeks and weeks of large demonstrations in Wisconsin against the governor and the Republican plan, including some very, very large demonstrations, and the Republican response to that of locking down the state capitol. After all of that, Republicans in Wisconsin State Senate tonight tried to pull a rabbit out of a hat. The way Democrats had stopped the bill, remember, was that they left the state. They denied Republicans the quorum they would need to convene in order to pass the union stripping bill. The Wisconsin rules are that no bill with fiscal implications can be considered without a certain number of senators present. Republicans needed at least one Democrat to show up to the Senate in order to meet that numerical threshold. Democrats fled the state so that quorum could not be reached.
It was awesome.
The bill could not be voted on. Then tonight, with no warning, Republicans announced that they took everything budget-related out of what they were calling the budget bill, leaving only the union stripping provisions.
Amazing.
Republicans, of course, had insisted that union stripping was a fiscal issue. But tonight, in order to try to pull this rabbit out of a hat, they decided it wasn't a fiscal issue anymore and that therefore they no longer needed that pesky quorum. And with no warning, they convened a conference committee, Democrats say in violation of the state's open meeting law. The last minute conference committee passed the union stripping bill.
And that's all you need to know. That was Wisconsin under Scott Walker, and it was ugly. But you got to give the Democrats credit because they did whatever they could to try to stop this from going through. There's still at NBCNews.com this article from February 23rd, 2011. So it was a couple of weeks before that. And the headline reads, Fleeing Wisconsin Dems Face Recall Threat. Pay issue. Let me just share a little bit with you. It says, Wisconsin State Senator Chris Larson packed just his toothbrush and one extra shirt as he and 13 fellow Democrats fled the state to avoid near certain passage of the Republican governor's contentious plan to strip government workers of their collective bargaining rights. Larson said by telephone Tuesday from somewhere in Illinois, which he declined to disclose, that tells you I didn't think it would take this long. Yeah. Nearly a week later, the stalemate persists at the Capitol in Madison, and the pro-union protests that began there have spread to other states, including Indiana, where labor legislation and other GOP proposals sparked a similar Democratic walkout. Again, the article here, the date was February 23rd. The Rachel Maddow clip I played was from March 9th. That's how long this went on. And these Democrats stayed out of the state of Wisconsin to try to keep them from getting a quorum, from passing this legislation that was just so unfair. And what did the Republicans do? They changed the rules. So we don't need no stinking quorum. So that's what they did, right? Well, now we're gonna fast forward to today. Thank God Scott Walker is out. Chris Larson is running to replace Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson, who is one of the biggest fearmongers, hate mongers, liars, gaslighters in all of the Senate. This man is batshit crazy. And for some reason, the Wisconsinites voted him in over Russ Feingold. Russ Feingold, who is one of our best senators. So anyway, Chris Larson is running for the U.S. Senate. He's going to join me and Howie. But Howie Klein and the Blue America PAC have endorsed Chris Larson as their newest Blue America endorsee. So I'll tell you what, let's not waste any more time. Let's first get Howie on the line.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole Sandler.
So I'm excited that Chris Larson is joining us today. I was just sort of doing the backstory, bringing the listeners, you know, back into time to 2011 when he led the Wisconsin State Senate to leave the state in order to stop Scott Walker from trampling over the state's collective bargaining rights for public sector employees. That was 10 years ago. And I'll tell you, when I saw that Blue America had endorsed Chris Larson, I got all excited because I was excited 10 years ago when he did this. And he's one of the really good ones.
He is. Chris is an old friend of mine, even from before then. He was a member of Young Elected Officials, which is part of People for the American Way. Uh-huh. As you know, I'm on the board of that. And I that was my sort of pet project, was the Young Elected Officials. And Chris was one of the really outstanding members of that group. So that's how I met him. He was at the time a member. He was on the Board of Supervisors, I think. He was a county supervisor for Milwaukee County.
Okay.
And he laid around for the state Senate. Now you have to remember, Wisconsin is arguably the most gerrymandered state in terms of the legislature in the country. Mm-hmm. So in other words, even if like 60% of the people vote for a Democrat to be in the state legislature, the Republicans will still have a majority of the seats by far. So it's a really heinously gerrymandered state. And Chris managed to win a real swing district in the southern part. It's like suburban part of Milwaukee County.
Okay.
So we've been friends ever since then. He's been a great member of the state legislature. He's someone that I've counted on over and over again. And I have to admit that I, kept badgering him to run for the U.S. Senate.
Oh, good. Well, then we have you to thank as well. So Chris Larson threw his hat in the ring. He's running. He's going to be joining us in just a couple of minutes. But I want to play this campaign kickoff video, if that's okay with you, because I think it's really well done. All right. So this is this will tell you a little bit more about Chris Larson. So let me do this. Nope. Okay. This and this. And here we go.
The American dream is making sure that your kids are going to have a better life than you. That they're going to have a cleaner environment, that the planet is going to be taken care of. That they are going to have a better education and access to more opportunities throughout their life. That they're going to have a justice system that treats them fairly. And that we're going to advance the idea of what it means to be a country together.
Senator Larson joins us now from Milwaukee.
In my 10 years that I've been a state senator, I've made sure to represent my neighbors, represent my constituents, and vote on their behalf.
We have the right to speak out to make sure the people, the majority, are being paid attention.
Over this last year, I've seen the people of Wisconsin sacrifice and struggle, working 40 hours a week and not able to make ends meet, wondering if they're going to get their health care covered or they're going to go bankrupt as a result. At the same time, the billionaires of our country have actually expanded their wealth by $1.3 trillion. Hundreds of corporations are not paying a single penny in federal taxes. It's happening because the system is rigged through money in politics, through gerrymandering, through, frankly, disinformation about what's going on in government. That's something that we can change. We can make progress at the national level. Right now, two-thirds of the United States Senate is made up of millionaires, and chief among them is Ron Johnson. He's actually the sixth richest United States senator, somebody who spent his career benefiting himself at the expense of the rest of us. Now it's our turn. I've spent my career fighting for the people in my community and in the state who otherwise wouldn't have a voice at that table, whether that be college students, the elderly, whether that be those who are trying to access health care and can't do it because it's not affordable. We can unrig that system
and finally achieve those things we fought for, like Medicare for all, a Green New Deal, ensuring the super rich pay their fair share.
As your neighbor, I'm asking you to join me in standing up to the bullies in Washington and Wall Street
so we can write the next chapter of American history together, so everyone, no matter their zip code, can finally achieve the American dream.
Chris Larson, U.S. Senate. VoteForLarson.org is where you can find the website that has got lots of information on it. So, Howie Klein, we talk every week just about, but there are still some, you know, new listeners joining us all the time who may not be that familiar with the Blue America PAC and what you guys do. I mentioned, of course, it's you, Digby, and John Amato. But why don't you tell them a little bit about Blue America and how you guys work?
Okay. We started a PAC in 2005 to raise money for progressive candidates, not for Democrats, mm-hmm. but for progressives, since there are no Republicans who are progressive these days. All of our candidates happen to be Democrats. Mm-hmm. We've raised about $7 million that goes directly through Act Blue, not through Blue America,
right,
but through
Act Blue.
Directly to the candidates. So it's not like we're asking people to donate to us and then we give it out. We're asking you to donate directly to the candidates. That's what we do. I just want to say something, though, before Chris gets on, because I don't want to embarrass him. But Chris is a movement progressive. That's not the embarrassing part. The part that I wouldn't want to say while he's on with us is that before he can get to Ron Johnson, there are like a pack of cutout Democrats, like
yep.
cutout doll, garden variety Democrats.
Right.
When I say Chris is a movement progressive, what I mean by that is Chris isn't trying to come up with the right words to say to turn on voters through a focus group or something.
Right.
Chris is who he is and who he has always been. Like I said, I've known Chris since he was a young guy. I've been friends with him when he had his first child. I've been friends with him when he had his second child.
Nice.
And Chris is the kind of guy who only people like Chris should be elected to public office. He is a believer. The people he's running against all have something in common. They don't believe in anything except their own careers. These are people who are not in it because of issues. I'm not even talking about the Republicans. I'm talking about Democrats who are running and who may, you know, try to take a progressive position here and there and say, look, I'm a progressive. And if suddenly the progressive position wasn't the most popular, they would say, look, I'm a conservative. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They are just whatever it has to be that their focus group tells them it has to be to try to win office. So I wouldn't want to say that when Chris was on the phone. It would embarrass him. Some of these people he knows, some of them are even colleagues, and he doesn't say nasty things about people.
Right.
But I want to.
I hear you, and that's why
there are a bunch. Some of them, in fact, are, not all of them. Some of them are actually terrible. like Ooh. Terrible. Better than Ron Johnson? Yeah. Anyone would be better than Ron Johnson. Even another Republican would be better than Ron Johnson. But, you know, he's got, you know, some multimillionaires trying to buy this Senate seat for themselves, or whose father is trying to buy his son a Senate seat. And you know, we have an opportunity here to get like someone who's really great into the Senate.
Right.
And it's not the time to settle for someone who's mediocre or, you know, I saw you were arguing with somebody on Twitter today who was saying, I didn't read the whole thread, I couldn't find it, but they were saying something about some candidate is better than Ron Johnson.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's too low of a bar.
Exactly.
We're talking about someone who could wind up being one of the really great senators.
Right.
Someone
like
Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Jeff Merkley. I mean, Chris Larson will be one of the great, great U.S. senators.
Oh, without a doubt. And one other thing, there were two people who were arguing with me. One who was a troll or probably a bot. Another person who actually suggested another candidate in the primary, and I guess it's not a uncrowded field. And I went to that person's website, and there's nothing there. Here's a give for me. I can always tell if somebody is a real progressive or not, because the real progressives aren't afraid to share their stance on the issues. And if you go to...
No, they're proud of their stance on the issues.
Right.
They want to share
their... Of course.
You know, the DSCC and the DCCC tells candidates, don't put out issues.
Amazing.
It's only going to make a problem for you.
Amazing.
And that's because people like Schumer are embarrassed of where they stand. People like Chris are not. People like Chris are running because of it, running on it, and want to talk to people about it. Some of the other candidates, the candidates who don't share where they stand, whether it's in Wisconsin or any other state, are either, you know, they feel that they can't explain it properly, they don't understand it themselves, or they're embarrassed of it.
Right.
That's what I meant by cutout Democrats.
Gotcha.
They're like cutout dolls. They're just nothing. They want a career. That's all it is. They want the position. They want a career. Maybe sometimes they'll do the right thing. It's the next Kyrsten Sinema. Maybe it's the next Jackie Rosen. But these are not who we should be.
No.
Especially in primary time. I mean, if some awful candidate wins a primary and then you want to vote for them because they're better than a Republican, well, that's your decision.
Right.
But now we're in primary time, the time to find the best Democrat we can find.
Absolutely.
And I think we have found that with Chris Larson.
Well, let's bring Chris Larson on because he is here. Chris Larson running for the U.S. Senate from Wisconsin to please. Oh, hold on. I have no audio on the shot. Give me one second, everybody. Everything went dead. Give me 1 second. We will have audio in a moment. Hold on 1 second. Let me put it back so that people can hear me now. I had no audio on that shot. Bear with me 1 second, everybody. I don't know why. It looks like I have audio on that shot. But Chris, we can hear you now until I get audio on our shot. We just don't have your picture. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the show. And thank you for jumping into this race.
Thank you very much, Nicole. I really appreciate being on your show. And it's good to see you, Howie, or hear you, Howie. Can you hear me all right?
I'm good.
Yeah, Howie can hear you. Okay, and now, hold on, now we've got audio. Okay, so there's Chris. Now we can see you and hear you. Sorry about that. So, I was looking at your website, which is voteforlarson.org, and right there on the homepage, Chris's goals. A Wisconsin that works for all, Green New Deal, Medicare for all, wealth tax, learn more. And you click on learn more and it brings you to more issues. This is what Hallie and I were just talking about. The Democratic Party, for some reason, tells its preferred candidates, don't do that. You don't want people to know where you stand on the issues? It sounds counterproductive to me.
Yeah, I mean, those are the things that motivate people, right? Of actually getting something out there about what you're actually going to do for the public. Call me old fashioned, but I think you're supposed to run on what you're planning on doing, showing with your reputation what you've done in the past, and then being able to demonstrate that by earning grassroots support little by little, bit by bit, and then actually getting in office and doing the things that you promised to do. So I don't know, maybe that's the organizer in me. That's the background I come from. That, it goes a lot further to actually tell people what you're planning on doing instead of just going after the other guy.
Right.
And we can absolutely do that. Ron Johnson is an easy target. He's particularly awful on just about every issue. But I think it's important once the election is over that once you have a new senator that we're going to have somebody who's going to fight for the little guy and fight to unrig the system so it works for everybody.
Right. Now I reminded our listeners of your time in the Wisconsin State Senate and 10 years ago, how you led your caucus out of the state to try to protect collective bargaining rights for public sector employees in Wisconsin. Wisconsin is the home of organized labor in this country, isn't it?
That's right. Yep. The first place where we had the civil service, first place that had organized labor for public employee unions before it spread across the country. It was a big punch in the gut when Scott Walker, under the guise of saying, oh, we have a budget crisis, we have to solve this budget, recognizing that was something that had nothing to do with the budget at all. It was him trying to go after public employee unions, specifically teachers, right, which mm-hmm. were the biggest target for him. But everybody, you know, sanitation workers, folks that are working for local communities. And to be able to say, nope, you no longer get to have a seat at the table to be able to negotiate real wage increases, to be able to negotiate benefits, and frankly, to even negotiate safe workplaces. All those things were taken off the table. And this was happening. We, of course, you know, didn't have the votes. This was after the massacre of 2010, right, where Democrats lost everything. And so what we could do is stop a quorum, right? And so we went to Illinois for what we thought was going to be a little while to make sure, you know, to say, look, we mean business. Let's start to have a conversation. Let's negotiate. At least listen to what the concessions are, frankly, that public employees were willing to make. And they said, look, we're ready to come to the table. But they said, nope, sorry, there's no table here. We're just going to do it without you. And of course, what happened was the largest protests in Wisconsin history. And frankly, if you're looking to pick a fight, I would not recommend picking a fight with educators, with teachers, mm-hmm. because they showed up with some of the smartest signs and they were the most dedicated and they brought all of their friends with them. And so that's how you know about it. That's how Howie knows about it. And that's how the rest of the country knew about it. Because we were doing whatever we are willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that the point gets across. To fight for the little guy.
When the Texas legislature walked out just last week to prevent them from having a quorum, did you say, yay?
Yeah.
Cool. Because you should take some credit for that because obviously they watched what you did, I would think.
So it's really funny, and I don't want to jump. I appreciate the credit, but I would say, you know, look, we the Senate Democrats of Wisconsin, we actually learned it from Texas because they did the same thing. If you remember that, when there was the effort to try and overturn or redo the maps in Texas mid census to try and draw gerrymandered congressional districts for them, and so in that case, the legislature, and there was more of them, they walked out. And went to another state and they stayed out for quite a bit to try and prevent these maps from being gerrymandered. So important things like that, it helps sound the alarm. It helps grab national attention, especially when it is something that is so severe. Right. And I salute the reps that did that in Texas, because this is something where they're trying to overturn democracy. Right.
Yeah.
This should not be something that's even allowed as we have this slow slide, in some places a quick slide towards fascism. We're looking to stop people from being able to vote in some cases and then being able to overturn election results if they don't like them,
right,
with a gerrymandered majority. So you got to do whatever it takes. This is our democracy. This is our country that's on the line.
Without a doubt. And now they're you know, like they did in Wisconsin, where they just changed the rules that we don't need no stinking quorum. We're going to do it without you. That's what they're trying to do in Texas. That's what they're trying to do in other places. This is why we need more, not only Democrats in the Senate, but progressive Democrats in the Senate who are not going to stand for it. And Howie, that's why the Blue America PAC is really, you know, focusing on a few good Senate races now. Because when you see a really good candidate, you got to get behind them.
Exactly. In fact, this morning, Chris and I were talking about, the importance of solidarity in terms of the progressive, the progressives who are running to sort of give each other some kind of, push so that each one is supporting the other one as much as they can and as much as it's the right thing to do. Because I can tell you, Chuck Schumer looks for people like Kirsten Sinema. He found her. He didn't pick her despite the fact that she was the worst member of Congress. She had the worst voting record of any Democrat in Congress. And I don't mean she had the second worst. I mean she had the worst.
Worst, right.
And she was the chair of the Blue Dogs. He picked her because of that. And now he's crying because she's not supporting his legislation. Well, that's what happens. And we need to pick people to run. We need to nominate progressive Democrats to run who are not Kirsten Sinema, who I might add, an old friend of Chris Larson's.
Right. In fact, you said you met them at the same time.
That's right. And one I realized was psychotic, and one I realized would be like a great addition to American politics.
There you go. The seat you're running for, Chris, unfortunately, somehow Ron Johnson has held it for this is his second term, right? He took it from Russ Feingold, who, in my opinion, is one of our best senators ever. How did this happen in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, it was when I got elected back in 2010, I had beat an incumbent of my own party who had strayed way over to the right. We were outspent, but we weren't outworked. We ended up winning 61-39 and beating a 14-year incumbent.
Wow.
And so that was thrilling. We beat him in the primary, but then the general election, that was the same day that Russ Feingold lost. And as somebody who grew up as a Feingold Democrat, I had the Facebook group on campus when I was a student trying to draft him to run for president in 2006, 2007. And so I was devastated. And so that was, if you remember, that was the unfortunate, huge, huge losses for Democrats all over the place.
2010, it was a massacre.
He ran under the, Ron Johnson ran under the guise of saying, oh, we need business leaders. We need business people in politics, right? And now hopefully we're done with that chapter in American history after this last president to show what that means, right? Because frankly, government is not a business. It is a
That's
community.
Right.
It is an extension of your family. It is to make sure that we're taking care of each other, and it should not be about profit motives. When you have somebody in office who is motivated by profit, you get somebody like Donald Trump. You get somebody like Ron Johnson, who has rigged the tax system so that he has doubled his wealth in his time as a U.S. senator, rising now to be the sixth richest U.S. senator.
Oh my.
So he has done that. He did that in 2010. In 2016, he was able to sneak by again in a devastating election, right? The same day that Donald Trump was able to get elected. But people know now, people in the state of Wisconsin, the two largest newspapers have come out against him and said that he's got to go. He is a danger to democracy.
Yeah.
He is not representing Wisconsin, and he is further embarrassing us. And so more and more people are figuring out that this guy he's out just for himself and rich folks and to rig the system in their favor. And two, he is out there apologizing and trying to mess up the truth about domestic terrorists that tried to overthrow our democracy. Right. Yeah. And if you need more beyond that, there's a heck of a lot more. But I think that's enough.
That is enough. And he's he's gone from just reprehensible to batshit crazy. I mean, the man is nuts. And the things that he's saying in the last few weeks alone are enough to make you go, he needs to not only be out of office, he needs to maybe be in a rubber room or something. Chris Larson,
I just want to add one thing about Johnson that doesn't often get mentioned, although I think a lot of people in Wisconsin know it. When you think of him as a businessman, you might think, well, he worked really hard and worked his way up to become a very wealthy man. No, he married into it and then tricked his brother-in-laws into taking over the company that he had nothing to do with working hard to build. So he's a very corrupt character in his business dealings, and now we have that corrupt character in the U.S. Senate.
Right.
And people saying, well, we have a businessman.
No, we don't.
We have a corrupt, cheating businessman,
right,
much like his idol, Donald Trump.
That's right. That's right. Peas in a pod. So, Chris Larson, your tagline on the website is "Let's unrig the system." So how do you plan on doing that? You know what we're up against in Washington. What can you do for us?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is, right? And what's interesting is I've been talking about that for a long time. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we've been building up to a run for U.S. Senate for a couple of months. And so it's been really interesting to be able to see this ProPublica article come out about how the 25 richest Americans have paid next to nothing in taxes over a five-year period, average of 3.4%, right? When the average person, it's over 20. And so seeing that and getting like, wait a second, the rich are really making out like bandits. Other reports showing the largest 100 corporations paying next to nothing in taxes. Mm-hmm. And so this is, you know, in a time where, frankly, the Republicans have tried to scapegoat just about everybody, the real people who are putting forward and dividing and hurting our country have kind of gone ignored, right? And so now that's finally coming in the spotlight. I am committed to doing that through my campaign of showing, look, while everyone else feels like we're stuck in the same place after this pandemic, where it's harder to find an increase in wages, harder to increase the minimum wage, which hasn't been done since 2009, how it's harder to finally get access to healthcare, right? Where medical companies and health insurance companies have figured out how to rig the system so that, again, bankruptcy, personal bankruptcy, the number one cause of personal bankruptcies is health concerns, is something where somebody comes sick. So people get that. What they might not get is that we can change that. We have a democracy. The way to fix that is by getting people in office who are committed to changing the system. And if we push that question and we push that out there, and there are some good allies. I heard Howie a little bit beforehand talking about some of the good people in the U.S. Senate who are doing that. I intend to add my voice to that chorus and make sure that that happens and put it up for a vote, because it is, one, necessary to make sure that we have a functioning democracy. And two, it is something that absolutely is publicly popular, that people want to make sure that the rich are paying their fair share so that we can pay for things like universal health care for every man, woman, and child in the country with Medicare for All, so that we can have affordable child care and people don't have to make the decision after they have two kids whether who's going to stay home to take care of them because they can't afford child care, right? Where we can pass a Green New Deal. We can make these things happen. But I think it's going to take you a few more U.S. senators, and I intend to be one of them, to push this question. And part of that reason is not to call out my own party, but two-thirds of the U.S. Senate is made up of millionaires. And so there are those who would not benefit if there is a big increase in the wealth tax. But it's the right thing to do. And I think if the question is called, if the vote comes up, we know the Democrats will be there to do it. We just have to get in there and actually make it happen.
And we need it. We need people like you to replace people like Ron Johnson. We need more than a 50-50 split. We need a majority. And if, you know, we need to make up for Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema so that they're non-issues anymore. And that's why we need you. And that's why I'm thrilled that Howie knows you and you're in the race. Howie, what should people do who want to help Chris?
Well, right now, what people should do is donate to Chris's campaign, both financially. They could go to his website. You gave that website out a minute ago.
Vote
and
for
they
Larson.
Could also volunteer to do phone banking when his campaign needs that, and other things that a grassroots campaign runs on. And that includes not just people in Wisconsin, but people all over the country. I know that that our time is running out really fast, but can I ask Chris one more question?
Oh, yeah.
So, Chris, I know I've been talking with you about this a little bit, but a lot of Democrats tend to just talk mostly about urban issues and now suburban issues, and they leave out rural issues. And Democrats have done really, really badly in rural parts of the country. And in your own state, where I saw Bernie just sweep every rural county, and in some counties did better than Trump did in the 2016 primary, there are rural voters who want to vote for progressive Democrats, but the Democratic Party doesn't reach out to them anymore. I mean, now this cycle, all I see Democrats saying is, it will get them rural broadband and leave us alone. I don't think that it's possible for a Democrat to win in Wisconsin without the rural vote. Are you reaching out to these people?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Howie. And yes, I mean, rural broadband is absolutely essential. But, you know, after folks are able to get online, they're going to find out that they're missing out on a heck of a lot more out in our rural areas. And I would say, look, our message of unrigging the system is something that rings true as much as it does for somebody who's struggling on minimum wage and trying to be able to access a affordable one bedroom apartment, which right now in Wisconsin, you cannot do.
Wow.
It rings true of unrigging the system. It rings true for them as it does for small family farmers who have been shouldered out because the federal agriculture bill that passes favors growth above all else. It doesn't favor sustainability. It doesn't favor continuing the culture of farming from one family, one generation to the next. And so what happens is anybody that's in a smaller farm, and small is a pretty generous term too. If you have a 400 head farm, that's not considered big. That's still considered too small.
Wow.
And we've seen those farms fail. Because right now the code does not favor them and the system does not favor them. And so when I say unrig the system, it means, I think a lot of people recognize it means them. And I've had those conversations with family farmers around the state. Just yesterday was traveling around. Today was my day at home to catch up on phone calls and to be able to talk to you, Nicole, and Howie.
Thank you.
But yesterday I spent 6 hours on the road going around the state and talking directly to people. But more importantly, listening to them about what their concerns are. And I think that's how Bernie Sanders did so well in the state of winning 71 of 72 counties back in 2016. And that's the plan that we're looking to do. Make sure that we are hitting everywhere, listening to everybody, and frankly showing that there's a proven progressive in this race that is not just better than Ron Johnson, but is going to fight for them for the next 6 years.
Awesome. Chris Larson. Again, find him. You're on Twitter at Chris J. Larson with an O. And the website is voteforlarson.org. And I'll post both of those on the blog at NicoleSandler.com along with today's show. Chris, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to meet you after all these years. I've been a fan for a long time. And I'm thrilled you're part of, you know, Howie's group here because, you know, I know I can trust Howie. He's got it down. He picks the great progressives.
Absolutely. Good to meet you too, Nicole. Been a big fan for a while, following you on Twitter. And yes, absolutely. Howie is a gem. I'm glad that he is out there fighting for for progressives all across the country.
You and me
so
both.
Thank you both. Appreciate you.
My pleasure. Howie?
Great to see you, Chris. Thank you very much for coming on.
All right. Thank you both. And with that, we're done for today. We will talk again, I'm sure. Thank you so much, Chris. It was great meeting you. And Howie, we'll talk to you next week, as usual.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks. Tomorrow, Jason Leopold's going to be here. Jason Leopold was just recognized almost with a Pulitzer Prize. He was the finalist with the FinCEN Files, but we're gonna celebrate tomorrow because it's Friday, and he deserves the kudos. He deserves the praise. He deserves, all the recognition he gets. So we'll talk to Jason tomorrow to finish out the week. I will leave you with the news because I didn't get to much of it today, and there was a lot of it to cover. And frankly, What's News doesn't cover a lot of it, but I'll give you what we got. And today, I'll actually play the correct one. Yesterday, I played the previous days because I'm having, a Mercury retrograde hell. And I never really believed it until this year. All right. Here's the news. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Supreme Court term officially ends at the end of June, so the opinions on the remaining 20 or so cases are being doled out slowly. But Thursday was an announcement day, and we got three. One of the biggies led the announcements. It was Texas versus California. Yes, that's the challenge to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. This is the case brought by 18 Republican-led states who sued after Congress in 2017 stopped enforcing the tax penalty on the individual mandate. Well,
the Supreme Court dismissing this challenge to the Affordable Care Act. They are saying that the plaintiffs in this case, who were the Republican-led states, so the attorneys general of these various states, including Texas, who have been challenging this law for several years, it's gone up through the courts. The Supreme Court here saying they don't have standing to challenge this law. So for now, the law will stand until potentially another challenger, someone different, brings a case. This is a significant victory for the Biden administration that urged the Supreme Court not to strike this law down. Interestingly here as well is the vote count. It's a 7-2 vote count with conservatives and liberals joining. It was Alito and Thomas, those justices dissenting. So really deciding this case on a technical issue that results in the entire law remaining.
So for the third time in about 10 years, the Affordable Care Act is upheld by the Supreme Court. Interestingly enough, the challenges came down. The first one failed 5-4, second one 6-3, and this final one 7-2. The second opinion announced Thursday was Nestle versus Dole. It was written by Justice Thomas. It was an 8-1 decision with Alito dissenting, and it overturns the Ninth Circuit Court decision that allows foreigners to bring lawsuits in U.S. courts for serious violations of international law. This one's kind of depressing because the Supreme Court basically makes it harder, perhaps impossible, to hold corporations accountable for human rights abuses using the Alien Tort Statute. And the third and final opinion for the day was another unanimous one. Fulton versus California was the case. The opinion written by the Chief Justice. This was a case in which the city of Philadelphia refused to make referrals to the Catholic Social Services because that agency didn't certify same-sex couples as foster care parents. The Supreme Court ruled that the city of Philadelphia went too far in imposing its anti-discrimination law on a Catholic charity that won't consider gay parents eligible to adopt foster children. The fact that this was unanimous is stunning because basically it's upholding the Catholic agency's discrimination against gay parents, but they upheld Obamacare. There are 15 cases still to go. We'll get more decisions on Monday. In other news, President Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday held their first summit in Geneva, followed by separate news conferences afterwards. Both acknowledged that U.S.-Russia relations had fallen to a post-Cold War low. Putin denied that Moscow was involved in recent cyber attacks by suspected Russian hackers. Biden warned Putin that the U.S. would not tolerate hacking or election meddling. He also said Russia would face devastating consequences if Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny dies in prison. But he did express willingness to work on easing tensions. He said, quote, "This is not a kumbaya moment, but it's clearly not in anyone's interest, your country's or mine, for us to be in a situation where we're in another Cold War." Well, here's some good news. The House on Wednesday overwhelmingly approved a bill to establish June 19th as Juneteenth National Independence Day, a federal holiday celebrating the end of slavery in the United States. The Senate had unanimously approved the bill on Tuesday, so next it goes to President Biden for his signature. The U.S. Office of Personnel Management saying Thursday in a tweet that, quote, "As June 19th falls on a Saturday, most federal employees will observe the holiday tomorrow, June 18th. President Biden plans to sign the bill Thursday afternoon. The Joe Manchin saga continues. On Tuesday, Manchin circulated a memo spelling out his demands for the For the People Act, a bill that every other Democrat in the Senate has sponsored. The three-page memo indicated that Manchin would be willing to back the For the People Act as long as his demands are met, and he spells out what changes he'd want. But that's not the end of Joe Manchin news this week. No, The Intercept got hold of a recording of a Zoom call that Manchin participated in, along with Third Way representatives. I point you toward the article by Lee Fong and Ryan Grimm at The Intercept. In this call, Joe Manchin appears to be suggesting, without explicitly saying so, that the wealthy executives, Republican donors on the phone call, could dangle future financial opportunities in front of an outgoing senator, in this case Roy Blunt of Missouri, while lobbying him to change his vote on the formation of a commission to investigate what happened on January 6th. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.